Edition. Navigating relevant social media and networking subjects. Produced by LunaWeb, this is show number 24, March 18th to 2010.
Good.
24. Well, I think there's, what, 12 weeks and a quarter? So we're wrapping up the
quarter.
Something like that. You know, 4-point-something weeks in a month and blah, blah. So
we'll be in our next season very soon.
Very soon. Yeah, excellent. And that'll be April. It'll be spring.
What is going on?
It'll be spring officially.
My God.
You know, I just went, I don't know how far, 10 hours to the southwest by car, and quite a bit different environment. So I'm glad to be back in Memphis where it's like cold and damp and
it's not going to be that way for long.
Well, okay, it's good to have back.
It's going to warm up and get pretty, just to spite you.
You just weren't quite ready for that, yeah.
Well, spring is not for, you know, another weekish or so.
4 days.
Is it 4 days? Really?
The 21st.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it kicks in pretty fast here.
Is it the 17th? Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah.
That's
why you guys are wearing all the green. Okay. All right. Well, I'm green free.
Better be careful. Somebody might pinch you.
You know, that's never happened, so I'm not worried about it.
I would not do that because I'm scared of your South by Southwest SARS.
I think I haven't been pinched for not wearing green since grade school.
I think the last time somebody did that to me, they got smacked, so there was no more pinching.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, who do we have here at the table? I'm Dave Barger.
Elizabeth Kawine.
Ansley Phones.
Matthew Crawford Tristler.
We are going to be talking up a little bit here about some trends I've spotted over at South by Southwest. Just some quick notes. And then, let's see, Amanda Mock will be inserting that segment with her, sharing some great stuff that she did with Le Bonheur Children's Medical Center down in Haiti after the earthquake down there. And then also some cool things coming on in the social horizon here in Memphis. So jumping right into things, what is up with that Facebook and Twitter making a major impact on the purchasing decisions?
Apparently there was just this study that consumers are 67% more likely to buy from brands that they actually follow on Twitter, and 51% more likely to buy from a brand that they're a fan of on Facebook. So it's not just the conversation influencing people. For at least this study is not just talking about that necessarily. It's talking about actually, like, if I follow Starbucks on Twitter, I'm 67% more likely to be a Starbucks customer.
So okay, what comes first here, the chicken or the egg? I mean, you know, okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm looking to buy a computer, sure, I'll follow, like, good retailers and computer companies. But if I'm just looking for a place to grab a latte, odds are I'll just stop somewhere.
I think this is an interesting, you know, I did pull this little story, this little tidbit off Mashable, and there is one sentence in this article that addresses that very thing that I think is quite interesting, where it just says that, you know, yes, okay, so there is that fact that people might just be seeking out these brands that they already like and
right,
they already buy from, but it says there's still much to be said for the mind share that engaging those existing brand enthusiasts on social media sites creates, in turn keeping them active.
That's very true. Like, the deeper relationship, like, that company that you already like builds with you, the more likely you are to talk to other customers.
Exactly.
And so maybe that's helping.
It's indicative of a larger trend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, you kind of always have to kind of wonder, I guess, the motivations behind the... Because the numbers are great, you know, and it would make somebody want to go get a social presence and get more followers so that people will buy their stuff.
True. Yeah. Mm-hmm. True.
Okay, so it was a matter of following them and whatnot. You know, I think another, and maybe it's not the Twitter and the Facebook kind of thing. Maybe this is more just the mobile apps and the power that we have in our hands these days to do research on the spot. Products that, you know, you walk into a store and you barcode scan something, you get product reviews on it, you know, or you just search for it on Google and get product reviews right there. I've not done a lot of that. I
do that all the time in the bookstore.
In a bookstore? Do you buy the book while you're in the bookstore, or do you just go ahead and order it online?
I usually just buy it there. I mean, I try to shop at, like, independent bookstores most of the time, and so, like, my decision's already made that I'm going to buy it there.
Okay.
It's just a matter of what I'm going to buy.
I see.
And if there's a book, like, a lot of the times, like, there'll be a book title that I remember or an author name, but I can't remember the book.
Mm-hmm.
Certain sections of the bookstore are organized in different ways. So, like, helping jog my mind about the title and the author.
Gotcha. Okay, how about you, Ansley?
I recently moved into a new apartment, and I very often found myself, like, at Target, not having done previous research for something as small as, say, a coffee maker, but wanting to spend my $20 the best way possible. So, getting on my BlackBerry and looking up some consumer reviews really fast. Mm-hmm. I do it all the time.
I buy things based on what's pretty. So, you know, I buy wine based on a label. And I would buy an appliance based on the box. I would not look up consumer reviews.
Well, the boxes for all the coffee makers were pretty boring, so...
Well, if you want to talk about consumer products for your mobile phone that you might be able to use, there's a lot of, like, banking applications to help you keep track of your wallet, because a lot of times those pretty appliances are not cheap.
Oh, see, I come where pretty and price tag intersect. The two P's. When they get perpendicular, then we purchase.
I was going to say, I could never afford a KitchenAid mixer on my own, but no. Those are dang pretty.
They are.
Now, where they intersect, I'm picturing this XY axis, and then one of those has to equal zero. So it's either zero pretty or zero price.
No.
It's the intersection.
No, she's got a little parabola going.
Yeah, the parentheses, and you've got, you know, three.
Yeah, you just get to the place where it meets in the middle. They come together.
Okay. Like the first quadrant or something.
Right.
Now, do you buy on the spot, or do you see it and go touch it and see how it feels and whatnot, and then go buy it online?
I definitely prefer to buy things in a store.
I, for one, like to see and touch it. Sometimes I'll pick it up, caress it, give it a nice little hug, cradle it like a baby.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I
got my last coffee maker, actually. They gave it to me for free after that, so.
There's something lost in online shopping for me. I do it when I have to, but I don't feel the gratification that I feel when I shop in the store, when I get to pick something out and carry it home, you know? Yeah. It's like picking out a puppy. You know, how much would it suck if you bought a puppy online? You wouldn't even get to play with it.
But expecting a package is exciting as well.
It can be exciting. It's true. It's true.
I tend to buy in the store also. You know, it just depends. I'm pretty much, when I'm in the mindset to have something, I usually am in the need of it. A pretty immediate need, and so I want to have it. But then again, you know, like today, you know, I also will order books online if it happens to strike me at an odd hour where I can't make it to the bookstore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know some people... evidently not represented in the room here, who will go to stores, caress it, you know, pick it up and, you know, really check it out, but then go buy it online and save a few bucks.
Yeah, I mean, that's entirely price motivated for sure. It would have to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because your convenience level is zero at that point. You know, you've made an extra trip to go and look at something that you're not even going to purchase.
Mm-hmm.
So that's they're motivated entirely by the price.
Unless you know that Amazon or somewhere has it with free shipping, too, you have to factor in that cost as well. So.
Right.
If I go to the store, let's say a toaster, how much is a toaster now? 30 bucks?
You can get one for 15, 20.
Okay, let's say 20 bucks. Let's say 20 bucks in person, 15 bucks online. I save 5 bucks.
Right.
If I'm already going to go to the store, I'm already taking that time and that gas and the wear and tear on my car and whatnot to go to the store and to pick it up and to really check the product out. And then if I leave it, I'm going to save 5 bucks if I go home and order it online. If there's no additional shipping and on and on.
Yeah,
and on,
you might offset the gas cost. and really, like, shopping in the store, like, you're talking about your time capital and your financial capital. It is a more expensive proposition, but there's something to be made about, like, the deliberateness of that process.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, I've bought things online that I have no idea why I needed that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, if you're going to go to the store and buy it, or if you're going to go to the store and just check it out and order it once you get home, you are still expending that time.
That time and effort. And you're actually expending a little bit more time if you go and buy it online.
Mm-hmm.
So really, like, it's a matter of, like, which is more valuable to you, your time or your money, mm-hmm. or, you know, your gas expenses as well.
Yeah. It's interesting. I thought maybe I was in the minority with buying it in the store, but either that or...
I think so.
Know, yeah. Hmm. For me... I know one thing is if they have a social presence and there's a channel there that I could hopefully get some results on, that affects me. Just because sometimes my luck may be bad and I might get the lemon more often than I deserve. And so when I get the lemon, I want to know, okay, I can talk to somebody who's going to make it right.
Yeah.
And knowing that they're out there and accessible makes me feel a little bit more comfortable with taking that risk.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, the thing is that having, say, Starbucks' Facebook page... If you have some sort of criticism and you put it up there, not only does Starbucks see it, but other people see it too. And you know somebody's reading that. You go to their website and you say, contact us, and you fill out a form and you send them an email. You don't know if anyone ever looks at
that.
Right.
Yeah.
So the fact that not only do you know they're going to see it, but you know other fans of theirs are going to see whatever it is you had to say as well, mm-hmm. is a much greater incentive to give customer feedback and also support the brand.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I know we had an experience with Sears a couple months ago where they were just, like, being completely inactive with their Facebook page. And people were going there to complain about products. And there were actually, like, a couple, like, renegade Sears employees who went in there and, like, tried to, like, make it right, but because it wasn't coming from Sears, it didn't have the same authority.
Was this My Sears on Facebook?
I think it may have been on My
Shame
Sears
on those
Facebook.
Guys. We have given them some free consulting in the past. You know?
Well, that's what I'm talking about. It was that experience.
I thought they were back at it again. Okay.
I haven't checked since. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I live in front of the old Sears building, but I don't, like, go to Sears.
Yeah.
So.
I've been there recently. There's still a viable shopping experience.
Yeah.
I am not in the market for a lawnmower.
Alrighty. So in addition to that, some quick things that I spotted over at South by Southwest. There's a lot more talk right now about privacy at South by Southwest than I've seen in the past. One of the keynote speakers was almost exclusively about privacy, and then there's privacy vendors there. The ACLU was there talking about with a booth talking about privacy and really pushing things. So anyway, that was one interesting note. You know, with the microblogging type platforms. If you kind of think about how they've evolved over time, you know, initially they were out there, and then you have platforms that come along and start aggregating all these updates. Well, with the location-based services now, you know, namely Gowalla and Foursquare, there are more tools that are out there, not just necessarily coming up with a competitive product, but coming up with aggregators that will aggregate Foursquare and your Gowalla updates into one spot.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people are updating both. And so it just kind of seems to be a trend. A notable trend that, you know, initially there's these things that are out there and they live in their own little realms, but then soon to follow are aggregation type services.
Right.
And,
so with like the rise of aggregation type services, are you thinking that we won't see like a single next big thing, or will we see like a rise of a next big trend in terms of like a type of service?
There may be some very popular things, but because there can be a lot more long tail product offerings that are out there that just happen to fit you better than they fit, you know, most other people, that those won't go away. And so there'll be niche types of networks that are out there that are pulled into these aggregators. Mm-hmm. Just because we're all getting to find these products that that fit our own little, you know, our own little nuances for whatever reason. It could be the interfaces, it could be the colors, or just how it fits.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting, too, to, like, just realize, like, how, like, the big thing here is not necessarily the big thing all around the world. I mean, earlier today we talked with Amanda Mock about how, like, the people she built relationships with when she was in Haiti with Le Bonheur, how they use Facebook, but not necessarily Twitter. Well, we should probably actually go ahead and cut into that interview real quick.
Our guest this week is Amanda Mock. She is the website editor for Le Bonheur Children's Hospital. Welcome to the expedition.
Hi.
Website editor.
Yes.
And much, much more, right?
Exactly. The website editor doesn't technically encompass all of the things that I'm able to do with my job. So I also do social media, our Facebook page, our Twitter account, and everything else that falls into anything that touches online falls under my responsibility.
Great, great. Cool. And recently you had some offline experience to augment your online publishing, right?
Definitely did.
Unfortunately, you got to go to Haiti.
Fortunately and unfortunately.
Well, I mean, unfortunate
incident.
Unfortunately, there was a reason why I had to go. Yes, I was able to go to Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
We left on January the 30th, so we were about two weeks post-earthquake.
2 weeks post-earthquake. And so why were you guys going down there?
Our team, we got together a group of medical doctors. There were four adult people, and then our team, the core of our team, was a surgery, pediatric surgery team. Mm-hmm. We had two orthopedic surgeons, one general surgeon, two anesthesia providers, a critical care physician, an EMT, and me. I was there to do everything that they couldn't do, like take pictures and communicate back home and to other people and keep us on track of, you know, schedules and that kind of stuff. So kind of help keep the group together.
So as far as like what do they call that, like a coordination?
I was the logistics coordinator.
Okay.
So sounds like a fancy title for telling people where to be and when to be. And
I imagine, you know, but if somebody's not doing it, you know, you don't know what's going on.
It
right?
was
you can be missing things that you need to have.
Oh, yeah. It definitely was an essential team member that people, I don't think, realize that they need. And we were glad I was glad I was able to fill that role.
Great.
Keep people together. Yeah.
So I was glad. So part of your actual responsibility there also was to share what was going on with
the folks.
To tell our story. Okay, great. Tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
How did you do that?
Thankfully, AT&T wireless network was pretty strong in Haiti, which was surprising to me. We were prepared, worst case scenario, to talk on satellite phone twice a day, have it recorded. We have technology at the hospital that they record, you know, for customer service purposes, that kind of stuff. So we, that was our worst case scenario, to call in twice a day on a satellite phone. We got down there, I opened up my iPhone and prayed that it would work, and it did. So text messaging was available, email was available, and voice.
Incredible.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Do you by chance know if AT&T went in there and augmented, did a little fix-it-up work in that two-week period?
Well, it was spotty sometimes. Mm-hmm. So the voice... voice was spotty, so all of a sudden the signal would go away.
Gotcha.
AT&T did, and I do have to plug them, for every Haiti relief worker that was there until the end of February, they comped our bills. So I didn't have to pay the $20 a megabyte for data while I was there, which was essential to me doing my job and to making me feel like I was a regular person.
Great.
It's amazing how plugged in you get to be when you live in the United States and you get to a place like that and not to be able to text message or things like that. It was one thing that kept me normal, I felt.
You're connected and publishing just through your iPhone connection, or do you have like a wireless card or something?
Well, wireless was not available at all. Wireless internet wasn't available. We did have high speed at the hospital that we stayed in. Not stayed, but we worked out of.
Okay.
So I was able to transmit batches of photos home. But here in Memphis, my team members would take my emails, my pictures that I would send, the phone calls that we would do back and forth. And they were the ones that actually posted to the blog for me. Okay. So I would call them once at 9 in the morning and once in the afternoon. And just we would just sit and talk and have a conversation. And a lot of the blog posts that we posted were basically transcripts of our conversation. I wasn't sure. I mean, that was the hard thing. I didn't know what people wanted to know. I mean, I could tell about the rice and beans that we had every day for lunch, but I didn't know if that was interesting or not. And so to be able to talk to somebody and talk through what our experience was really important. And so on my team back at home, we had three people that I would call. And then throughout the day, I would take, snap a picture and email it to them, and then they would end up posting that. So we ended up posting to the blog three or four times a day, and they would break up my phone calls and things like that and post continuously throughout the day.
Okay. Okay. So during the course of the day, what were you doing with regard to in preparation for these conference calls that you would have with, you know, HQ, you know, at the end of the day? Were you writing notes to yourself, or tell me about that process.
Yeah, I had a large Canon camera, so I was taking pictures continuously throughout the trip, and then I had a notebook that I would scribble names down, notes. Patient names were really important. People wanted to feel connected, so being able to say, "This is me, Sabina," not just this little girl who had a broken femur. To be able to put a name to faces was really important. So I was constantly writing down names of other volunteers, the people that we worked with, the countries that people were from. So I had a running list every day. And then we had about an hour commute back and forth to the hospital. So in that hour, I could sit down and really, okay, let's think about the surgeries that we did this day. What made them complicated? And could digest what happened. And so the notes were so important.
Okay. When we say our commute, was that a bus or?
A bus.
Okay. I mean, you never know.
We had like a 15 passenger van, I think. It wasn't by donkey.
You know?
It wasn't by moped, which we joked with, sent a text to our upper management. We're like, we traded in our bus for mopeds. The commute is so much faster. And they believed us. So that was a nice little joke. We did not have mopeds. We had two Monteros in a van, basically. And so we ended up, our home base and where we stayed and slept was with the Haiti Medical Missions of Memphis in Croix de Bouquet, which is about, it's like a suburb of Port-au-Prince.
Did you say Monteros?
We had Monteros, yeah.
What is that, like flour tortilla?
No, it's an SUV.
Oh, an SUV. Oh, those things.
Yes.
Okay, okay.
We
had, gotcha.
We drove. That's our transportation. So in that 45 minutes was on dirt roads with mm-hmm. no paving. And then our hospital, Sacred Heart, was in downtown Port-au-Prince. Mm-hmm. The Capitol building, basically the Capitol White House building, is all one place. And it was completely demolished in the earthquake. And we passed by that every day. So we were literally minutes from that area.
Hmm. While you were down there, did you have an opportunity to observe the locals' use or unavailability of some of the social type tools that we take for granted here?
I was really impressed. We had some college age interpreters that their school was wiped out, so they were looking for things to do, and so we hired them as interpreters. And the kids are on Facebook. They don't use Twitter so much. But, I mean, immediately when I got home, was friended by all five of them on Facebook, which I thought was hysterical. They, they had laptops. Technology is not completely absent in that culture. Mm-hmm. It's not as pervasive as it is here, but it's not absent either. They gotcha. Really aren't up on Twitter. Mm-hmm. I didn't see many people on Twitter.
Okay.
But they were definitely Facebooking.
You saw some on Twitter, though?
I saw some on Twitter.
What other kinds of differences made? Did you observe maybe cultural differences or different uses of social media just because they're culture?
Unfortunately, they speak French, and so a lot of the stuff that Stevenson, one of the translators that I'm friends with, a lot of stuff is in French. I don't understand what he's talking about. But so I didn't get the chance to talk to him a lot about how they use it, but it's definitely their networking tool of choice there. And the hospitals and stuff, they don't use it to promote themselves. The hospital that if you compare our hospital website to their hospital website, it's in night and day. The amount of information mm-hmm. is there. It's basically, their hospital website is basically a brochure, but there's no diagnosis information. There's no how-tos. So they don't, they just talk about the services they have, and it's basically five pages done in Flash, and that's it.
Oh.
And compared to ours, which is thousands of pages long, it's night and day. The access to internet like that.
Can you tell us about the channels, which channels that you normally use as far as, getting the social channels to mm-hmm. let people know what's going on?
Primarily, we used, the blog was number one. We used our Facebook account
mm-hmm.
to communicate when there was a new blog post. We did use our Twitter account to communicate when there was a blog post, and everything just linked back to the blog. On the homepage of our website, our static website, it was front and center that we were down there and that we had a blog and you could follow us. And the other thing that we did for our families, for the comfort level of our families, is we did daily emails to them. Our emergency contacts got daily emails of maybe some of the behind the scenes stuff that we didn't post.
Oh, okay.
So just so that they would know that we were okay and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
Which was really important. That was the main part of keeping the blog, was to keep our families updated.
Hmm. What was the most surprising thing that you observed while you were there?
The most surprising thing that was how thankful people were, mm-hmm. and that in the United States, people question their doctors so much more. There is the level of trust that these people had with us to go down there, and we don't speak English. I mean, we don't speak French. We speak English.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand us. We're having to go through interpreters and they were just like, okay, whatever you need to do, let's do it. I want to get better. I want to move on, and whatever you need to do. So they didn't question a lot of the stuff that we were able to do to help them. And that was really surprising to me, to come from this culture where there's a level of distrust a little bit with our healthcare professionals.
So I guess some of these folks, they had been injured for 2 weeks before receiving
mm-hmm.
treatment.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. The very first day that we were at the hospital, we treated a little girl who had what we thought was a forearm fracture that was two bones. And we got in there because that's what the x-ray showed us. was that it had two fractures. We get in there and there are six fractures.
Oh.
So complicating the amount of fractures that she had with the amount of time that her bones were somewhat beginning to heal a little bit, mm-hmm. the complications of that were much worse than either of our orthopedic surgeons had ever seen before. And so the complexity of cases that we had to do were above and beyond what we would ever see in the U.S. just because of the time, the lack of access to physicians and healthcare, and they're not healthy people. I mean, uh-huh. for the most part, these people are malnutritioned and have never seen a doctor before, or their experience with physicians has been lower. So the complexity of cases is worse than we would have ever seen here.
Wow. Yeah. you showed up with some numbers, right?
Yeah, I did.
These are consumption type things?
These are consumption things. I didn't know. We had no idea what... People were going to follow the blog. We figured they may come once or twice and then mm-hmm. head off, and that would be all. And I had no idea what the level of interest was, actually. And 42,000 people viewed the blog in that 2-week period, which mm-hmm. is pretty amazing to me. And we compared it earlier to our regular website visits, and that is almost the number of page views of our regular website.
Wow.
So we were really surprised at the level of interest that people had.
So I know we're getting ready to run out of time here.
Sure.
What about some relationships? You develop some sense of camaraderie when you go through, I would imagine something like that,
mm-hmm.
Both with the team at Le Bonheur, but then also with some of the folks on the ground there, the locals.
Mm-hmm.
Any comments on that?
And the people that I worked with. Mm-hmm. We didn't just work in a bubble. We worked for people with all over the world. And so I made a lot of good relationships. And thankfully, it's crazy, with Facebook, we're able to keep up with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really neat. A couple of the doctors that we worked with are from Chile. And so after the Chilean earthquake, a couple of weeks later, to be able to connect with them on Facebook and to make sure that they were okay,
right.
It was really special. There's a relief worker that we met in Wisconsin that I'm able to hang out with now on Facebook.
Wait, okay, so tell us how to find this information and the kind of stuff that you're putting out there right now.
Yeah, absolutely. You can visit us online, lebonheur.org. lebonheur.org. You can get us on Facebook. We have a fan page and be our fan. We're also on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is @LeBonheurChild. And on Facebook, Le Bonheur Children's. So.
Yeah, thanks for the spelling about Le Bonheur.
Absolutely.
I have to tell myself every time I spell it out, Le Bonheur.
Yes.
Yes. To make sure I spell it
right.
It's
Southern French.
Okay.
Is what we call it.
Southern French. Alrighty, Amanda. Well, hey, thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely.
And sharing all that while you were down there.
Thank you.
To finding out more about that.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, again, a big thanks to Amanda Mock and Le Bonheur Children's Medical Center for going down there and helping those folks out, and no doubt making, really representing Memphis and the good hearts that are around here in a great way. it's great to have her out here. So coming up, what do we have on the Social Horizon?
We have the core conversation, of course, as always, this Friday at 11:30.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find out information about how to call in and get involved with that in the show notes at socialexpedition.com. We've got our April breakfast coming up here in just a couple of weeks, April 7th. And that's going to be with Rod Kirby as our guest speaker, who is here on the podcast with us. I think it's that last week he was here.
Mm-hmm.
So not long ago. And you can listen to his comments and then come and hear more from him on the 7th. Find out more about that at meetup.com/socialexpedition. And also, right now, you should check out the LunaWeb blog. We are encouraging you to get involved with the Memphis Google Fiber campaign. So there's a blog post up there about how you can help out. We're going to be making a video and trying to get Google to give us what? Why are you laughing at me? Did I say something wrong?
No. I'm sorry. Sometimes when I hear fiber, what comes to my mind, and maybe it's the 46-year-old mindset, it's I hear fiber and I hear like regular. You know what I mean?
Oh my God. Anyway.
All I know is we, as Memphians, are trying to maintain a little bit more dignity than Topeka, Kansas did when they changed their name to Google Kansas.
And yeah, we are not going to do that.
Part of a competition for the same thing.
Because we're Memphis, we represent, we're real.
I saw a video, one of the Bring Google Fiber Here videos for someplace in Florida, and they showed, you know, Duluth, Minnesota, and they showed all the snow and how horrible it was, and they showed, you know, Kansas and the flat and how boring it was. And then they showed this paradise they live in, and it's like, well, you don't need internet. Go outside.
Oh, yeah.
It's true. Anyway, so if you want to get involved with that, definitely check out our blog. We've got a little blog post aggregated some details for you and some links there. And be on the lookout for...
There's no if about it. I mean, you need to get involved.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So go get involved.
This would be a great opportunity for Memphis.
Go get involved where?
Lunaweb.com.
Lunaweb.com.
Our blog.
Okay.
We have information on our blog. And we'll put some stuff, put links in the show notes as well. But we've got a one-stop shop for you on our blog right now.
And, well, very good. Thank you very much. I have to check that out. And don't forget that tonight we have our Twilight Camp.
That's right.
And over at Davis Kid. Starting at 5:30-ish.
That's right.
And yeah, come on out. And there's nothing to get in. Just bring enough money for your own iced tea or whatever, and come along, and we'll shoot the social for a while.
Yep.
Okay. Very good. So with that, I think we're wrapping it up.
We'll see you next week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Everybody, take care.
The Social Expedition Podcast is produced at the offices of LunaWeb, a Memphis leader in web development and social media, online at lunaweb.com. Your hosts are Dave Barger, Elizabeth K. Wine, and Matthew Crawford Trissler, who edits the podcast. Our theme music is The Year Before the War by Eric Maskell, available at ericmaskell.com. For more information about the Social Expedition, including links mentioned during the podcast, visit socialexpedition.com. Thanks for listening.
Certain sections of the bookstore are organized in different ways. So, like, helping, like, jog my title of both the author and the title. Chalk my title.